All right. I'm George. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, George.
So, you know, where I work, we have this saying, and I don't think it's an original saying, but, you know, is all the value of a meeting is in the preparation, right? And the deliverable is, okay, you know, not the thing to focus on. The thing to focus on is the preparation. So I've definitely, that's been certainly the case this week. So I was asked, I think almost exactly a week ago, if I'd be willing to speak. And I have spoken before, but I got really freaked out with this 25-minute stretch. It's like, wow. Jennifer told me that at the end. I'm not sure I would have said yes if I had been told up front it was 25 minutes. So, you know, I definitely saw that through this week of sort of thinking and preparing for this, it served as an activator of some defects for sure. I kind of, you know, went through these different phases. So, you know, my first thing was, okay, I got to do a PhD dissertation on abstinence. So I've got 5 pages of bullet points here. I am not going to run out of material. Not worried about that. But then, you know, then I kind of went to, well, okay, there are all these different tools. So, you know, I'm still, if my higher power willing, I'll have 6 months coming here and 6 months of abstinence in 8 days. I'm super, super grateful for that. But, you know, but like, I had all these thoughts like, you know, I have a plan of eating. But I haven't exactly written it down. And what's the difference between a plan of eating and abstinence? And then I've heard this term action plan. Well, what's the relationship of that? So I figure, you know, I have to know all the answers to all these things. So I have something interesting to say, right? So this is all my defects starting to activate, right? And then, you know, I also got into, well, what are all the things I've heard people do around their abstinence that I'm not doing? Right, so I started focusing on that. That wasn't too much fun. In the end, I spent a good chunk of the week just sort of expending a lot of nervous energy around preparing, and not that much in actual preparation. It was good to look at what my responses were, and kind of. You know, I do some comparison of before and after. So, you know, so what I'll do is, you know, I will talk a little bit about my history, and then just some of the, you know, kind of how I've approached, how I think about abstinence and kind of how I got there, some of the challenges I've experienced and the things I've learned. So that's the plan. So. Somebody earlier, you know, said that they had gotten here honestly. I feel I've gotten here honestly. I guess it's, you know, one of the big things I learned was a big light bulb. It actually just went off this morning, actually, when I was thinking about it. Because I was, you know, when I tell my story, I'll usually start by saying, well, after I got sober from alcohol 18 years ago, then... you know, food kind of started creeping in and started taking over. And it took me 18 years to figure out that I'd essentially substituted addictions. But I did eventually figure it out. And so that's kind of how I start the story. But what I realized this morning was that actually, I have a new insight. So the new insight is... I think food actually is really my primary addiction, because what I didn't really look at too much is what happened before I started drinking. So when I look that far back, what I see is that I had a dynamic in my house as a child where there was a lot that was expected of me. I had a mother who... expected a lot. There were a lot of consequences for not achieving. I really wanted to please. I was always, you know, wanting to hit the bar, do more. I was kind of vectored off into activities. So piano was one of my things, and you know, we were listening to the piano up there. And I bet most of you were just thinking, like, wow, this is really great. And for me, it's like, boy, that's a big trigger, you know. And so when I hear, so there's some you know, very, I don't know how good that person was, but it was very difficult stuff that he or she was working on. So, you know, one of the things I was vectored into was piano as a child. And I was really good. I really enjoyed it. I was the Washington State High School piano champion of 1980. But then, like, when I was a senior in high school, it's like everything crashed down, right? So my mother told me, well, you know, actually, that's not what we want you to do. And so I had this period of time where I just sort of lost track of that, and that's not what I ended up doing. And so I'm still working through that, actually, all this time later. But what I, you know, my eating patterns really started all the way back there, right? The food was a source of comfort. I, you know, instead of to take a break from studying and trying to please my family and people around me, I could take comfort in the bread box, right? So that was kind of, so I go back there, and then when I was 15, I found this thing called alcohol, which is kind of a concentrated form of food. And then that kind of took over. And, you know, the eating was kind of okay, but that took over for 20 years. And what I see now is that basically food just kind of reasserted itself once I was relieved of that. So, you know, my basic pattern was just sort of, you know, a mindless, constant ingestion of different stuff. I would just, you know, I couldn't go to the gas station without coming back with a pile of candy bars. I couldn't, you know, I would have dinner on the way home before having dinner. You know, I would just constantly eating is sort of what, you know, I'd gotten to. And, you know, at some point, I've got a variety of props here because they comfort me. One of them is, you know, a picture of me kind of near a high weight. You know, I topped out somewhere in kind of in the 260s a couple of times, multiple times. And you know, I found exercise, right? So I started going through this hellish thing of trying to figure out how many calories I could burn in 3 hours of exercise, so what that would allow me to eat. And, you know, somewhere along the way, I took up long distance walking, right? So this was about 10 years ago. I decided, wow, you know, well, I'll just go walk 200 miles in a week, right? Now I can burn off a lot and I can eat anything I want if I do that. And I did that, and I journaled a lot. Like after I would take a long distance walk, I'd journal, and you know, I read some of it now, and I look at what I did. I mean, I walked 30 miles in a day. My feet were bleeding, and I fell down. I mean, I was in excruciating pain. But you know, my head had gotten to a place where I felt like I was doing something good for myself, and I was just completely fucked up. I mean, like my thought process was just totally broken. So, you know, I've gone through many cycles of diets. I've tried a lot of stuff out there. I did low carb a lot, which freaked out my doctor when, you know, my cholesterol started spiking. I tried, you know, structure plans. I tried anti-inflammation diets. I, you know, kind of yo-yoed for many years. Right before I came in here, you know, I tried hypnotherapy, and you know, I mentioned I'm also an alcoholic, so I would episodically re-engage in AA, right? So if things were going bad, or you know, I was feeling out of control, I knew there was a place I could go. But I wasn't working a program. I worked a program for 2 years in AA, my first 2 years. I mean, I was beat up badly enough that I knew I had a sponsor, who's still my friend. I get together with him still. Did the steps, got better, had a spiritual experience. But I was, you know, so the curse, the blessing and the curse is that I really was relieved of the compulsion to drink. Okay, that's great. But I didn't have anything that was beating me up anymore that was kind of keeping me engaged in a program. So I just sort of lost contact and I became anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, 18 years later, I kind of showed up here. You know, I was bottomed out again. What I was seeing is that the food was creating, like the steady stream of food was creating an inverse reaction of fear and anxiety and despair, right? So like I couldn't eat without also getting that. Just felt hopeless in so many ways. I would manage to keep my job. I didn't feel like working. I managed to keep my relationship with my wife going, but I think both of us strongly considered checking out several times in the last year, and a lot of it was just despair, you know, straight up despair. So I came here feeling that way, and you know, I came to a meeting about a year ago. I went to Ravenna on Sunday night, and I heard people talking about food like an addiction. And I heard this phrase, compulsive eating, for the first time. And, you know, I kind of got, that really got my attention. But it wasn't quite enough, right? I went back out. I say, okay, well, thanks. You know, there's somewhere in the big book that talks about, you know, thanks for the information. So informed, certainly I can do something around self-will to apply all this great learning. So yeah, okay, great. I eat compulsively, right? Well, I had figured that out by this point, that I wasn't eating normally. But you know, as it also says, I was powerless to do anything with this self-knowledge. I went back out. I did another diet, and I did lose weight. And I gained, of course, I gained it all back. So, you know, when I showed up finally on May 29th, which is, oh no, okay, May 30th is the date I have in the book, in pen, I will note. But I can if I have to cross it out, I cross it out. But that's the date that's in the book. That's my abstinence date. So the day before that, I came to a meeting. I went to the Denny Park meeting, and it clicked, right? I really got it. I heard the message, and I felt this little glimmer of hope, right? I had this feeling I was in the right place. So, you know, some amazing things happened. I don't think I'm going to forget that evening, probably ever, right? I mean, people reached out to me. I stayed after the meeting, and I talked to people. I never did that in AA. Somebody gave me a ride home. Right, I live in town. I don't have a car. I do bus where I can. Borrow my wife's car every once in a while. And I got these pamphlets, right? So like everybody does. And I saw Dignity of Choice, and I came through here, and I see this 301 plan, right? And I read that. It's like, you know, okay, that makes sense to me. So this is what I've been following, right? It was basically the first thing I read. And, you know, so I've been, that has been my base abstinence. I've had a lot of success with that. You know, I have experienced some significant physical recovery as a result of that. I've done things I never thought I would do. I threw out not only my biggest clothes, but I also threw out my smallest clothes. I threw out all of my diet books. And, you know, I've enjoyed this physical recovery, but I think about it completely differently than I ever did before. If I have an issue, I do I do weigh myself, not that often, but I do weigh myself if I see a number that's up. Now I think about, okay, is my abstinence still okay? Have I been abstinent? Is there something about my food plan that I need to readjust? That's what I think about. I don't think about, how far away I am from that moment. I'm just going to kind of, go back out. And I have not, I went on all these sort of, the diets I went on were, there's a lot of magical thinking in them. This combination of foods or not is going to do X, Y, or Z because of chemistry, theories, science, right? I mean, whatever. But it all boils down to magical thinking. As I said, thinking about doing this talk sort of activated some defects, and I tried to really spend a little time thinking about what was making me uncomfortable, right? So I hear all kinds of things that people say, right? There are a lot of things I don't do, right? So I have not eliminated any food groups. I don't weigh. I don't measure. I don't commit my plan to my sponsor. I don't text in my meals. Until yesterday, I didn't have a written plan of eating, right? So all these things I'm not doing. But I don't have this crushing despair thing going on. I am experiencing success with my abstinence. I have a relationship with my higher power that is something that I never thought I would have, right? Somebody mentioned before, you have to bring the tiger out 3 or 4 times a day. I have to have a higher power to get through meals and get through days and not have anything between meals. There's just no choice in that for me. So that's required me to seek my higher power's help at least 3 times a day. At the beginning of a meal, deciding what I am going to eat, and at the end of a meal, when I'm going to stop and when I'm going to start, not eating anything until the next meal. So, I wanted to talk about some of the struggle points, just so I kind of put them down and had somebody to put them out there. I had this notion when I started that I wasn't going to eat any unhealthy foods. And I've definitely relaxed off of that, right? Like I wanted to swear off French fries, just to take a specific example. And that hasn't exactly happened. But, it has forced me to be a little more... The other speakers talked about core sobriety or core abstinence, and I've done that too. When I actually wrote down what my food plan is was very helpful, and I wrote it down in a way where I was trying to work with my intuition, as it talks about. That was actually one of the readings it talks about, that we get back in touch with our intuition. For several months, I didn't really understand what that was talking about. But it's that voice that comes when things are a little quieter, right? If there's more space, there's more space in your life, there's more space to think, there's more space for the higher power to talk back. If I'm transmitting all the time, there's not time for something to come back. So some of the things I've learned, I need to know that my current food plan isn't magical either. There's no power in the food plan. Abstinence is a state of mind, right? It's an attitude and a willingness to take a set of actions in concert with my higher power. That's what abstinence is. The food plan is a tool. So because I've had success with this food plan, that doesn't mean there's anything magical about it, just like there's nothing magical about diet X, Y, or Z. The magic is the higher power, not the food plan. So I actually went and I saw my doctor last week, who was thrilled with my progress. I got all this great feedback from my doctor. And I told him kind of essentially what I was doing and kind of the elements of my food plan. And he's trying to talk me into adding snacks. So you say, yeah, you get this hormone response and you'll end up eating less. And it's like, okay, well, thank you for the information. I mean, I didn't tell him anything. But that's a source of information. That's not something I have to go, and act on. But what it challenged me to do is to really consider, okay, it will change because I'm changing. Everything's changing, right? I'm a different person every day. So, if I attach too much importance to the specifics of my current food plan, I'm going to fall into the same kind of a trap at some point where I'm putting the power into that and not trusting, my will, working with my higher power in concert with my sponsor to make reasonable adjustments that I'm going to have to make. So, the other things that I've learned is I really, I still have a lot of problems with self-judgment and rumination, right? So I wrote down here, I have to learn to judge myself less and let go of all these comparison elements, right? I mean, all the information that I get about what other people are doing and the success they're having in program, I learn something in every meeting, and I don't have to apply 100% of what I hear. It's not appropriate for me. It's up to me to make judgments about what's right for me. The diversity of what people call abstinence and what their programs are is one of the most interesting things about this program. And that is something to really embrace and not get into a comparison game. The other thing I wrote down is my inner playfulness and lightness are still scared to come out. That's okay, right? It's a lot of years of sort of repressing my ability to be in touch with that part of myself. So it's not going to be where I would want it to be in a day or a week or a month or a year. There's this element of lightness about, like, I know how serious it is, right? I know what could happen. I've got lots of experience with recovery programs, and I get it. I mean, I know it's life and death. My challenge is not so much convincing myself of that, but trying to retain a lightness about it and a humor with myself, right? And if something happens, it happens. And how to recover, how to come back, how to stay connected, that's still there. So, but it's really good to think about that because that's something I'm really going to spend some time on. So as far as, I did want to read one thing. We actually, in the group here, we actually read this a couple weeks ago. This is page 115 of the Brown Book. So they told me I was now in a race. What race? It was the race between the eventual decline of my willpower and the acquisition of a new power that would come from working the 12 steps. Willpower and the role models in the room helped me follow my food plan initially, but other OA members said willpower would eventually run out and had to be replaced by another kind of power. I didn't know what they were talking about, but my pain gave me the willingness to follow directions. So, that's what it's all about. I mean, I'm kind of at a point where sort of my, initial rush of relief of being able to find the fellowship and the help and the literature has got me kind of as far as I am. And I am engaged in working the steps. I started my fourth step about a week ago. Going to be working on that for 6 months, it looks like. Question today is going to be 6 months. So, but that's the answer. The answer is in that. And the further I go, the less it's going to be about food and worrying about my food plan and worrying about comparison, you know, comparing my abstinence with other people's. It's going to be less about that. And it's going to be more about finding relief in my connection with my higher power, in healing my relationships, in being able to be connected with people when I'm there, right? I won't have to be checked out while I'm having dinner or my head somewhere else. I'll be able to be present in my own life. And so that's the promise, and that's where things are going to be headed. So, yeah, you know, I'm looking at, you know, sort of what's ahead, and you know, trying to believe that I'm going to see the results in the program. My wife is a very clever person. This is a generic skin corrective. And, you know, I'm of a certain age, and I don't like the way my skin's looking. I'm okay with the hair going gray, but I don't like these damn spots, right? So a couple of months ago, she bought me sort of a name brand of this, and I said, no, there's no way I'm going to spend that much money on this. You know, take it away. So, you know, so then this shows up, right? So, you know, like my willingness to do my daily meditation, to say my third step prayer, to do my writing during a quality hour, not at the end of the day because, oh shit, I forgot today, is kind of like, is kind of like this, right? Like, you know, my wife says, like, I may have to use this stuff for 6 or 8 months before I see any difference. It's like, really? But, you know, my willingness to kind of suspend disbelief and try it anyway, I think it's a real good analogy for the attitude I'm trying to cultivate towards working a program. So, you know, in my last thought, you know, the thing that kind of got me through, you know, my first year in AA, you know, and this thought of a lifetime without my favorite substance, right? I was able to get to a place where I could understand that, yes, this is something that you have to be willing to put aside, at least for today. But what do you get instead? Everything. Everything. You know, there's nothing you can't do. You know, if you're not, you know, drunk when you come home, what can you do? If you're not binging on food, what can you do? What does it open up? And I have seen, you know, relief from the stress and the anxiety. And I think more clearly, all of this has come as a gift of the program so far. So, you know, it's just, it's for what comes back, it's just not that high of a price to pay. And I'm able to see that, and that does give me hope. So I want to thank you guys for giving me an opportunity to speak today. It's really a great process setting up for this and preparing, and I think I'm going to stop. Thanks.
Thank you, John.